The Capital Investment Committee for February 25th is called to order. This remote hearing is taking place in accordance to House Rule 10.01 and is being live streamed by the House Public Information Office. Mr. Lincheski, please take the roll.
Members, you may unmute yourself when your name is called. Representative Fu Lee.
Lee, present.
Representative Fu Lee, present. Representative Mary Murphy.
Murphy, present.
Representative Mary Murphy, present. Representative Dean Erdahl.
Erdahl, present.
Representative Dean Erdahl, present. Representative Esther Abaje.
Abaje, present.
Representative Esther Abaje, present. Representative Kayla Berg.
Present.
Representative Kayla Berg, present. Representative Greg Davids. Representative Keith Franke.
Present.
Representative Keith Franke, present. Representative Mike Freiberg.
Present.
Representative Mike Freiberg, present. Representative Rick Hansen.
Present.
Representative Rick Hansen, present. Representative John Hewitt.
Present.
Representative John Hewitt, present. Representative Leon Lilly.
Lilly, present.
Representative Leon Lilly, present. Representative Eric Lucero.
Looking for a good recipe for National Chili Day.
Representative Eric Lucero, present. Representative Rena Moran.
Present.
Representative Rena Moran, present. Representative Nels Pearson.
Pearson, present.
Representative Nels Pearson, present. Representative Donald Raleigh.
Raleigh's present.
Representative Donald Raleigh, present. Representative Jordan Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, present.
Representative Jordan Rasmussen, present. Representative Liz Ryer.
Ryer, present.
Representative Liz Ryer, present. Representative Nolan West.
West, present.
Representative Nolan West, present. Representative Jay Zhang.
Present.
Representative Jay Zhang, present. Representative Greg Davids. Members, with the conclusion of the roll call, you may mute your devices. A quorum is present.
Thank you, Mr. Lincheski. A quorum is present. I do want to note that Representative Davids is excused from the committee hearing today. Members, Representative Murphy, do I have a motion to approve the minutes for February 23rd?
I move approval of the minutes for February 23rd.
Representative Murphy, move approval of the minutes for February 23rd. Any discussions? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say nay. The motion is approved and the minutes are adopted. Members, today we will hear from the Metropolitan Council on Bus Rapid Transitway Development. This will be followed by a bill and an informational presentation related to BRT lines with some public testimony. Finally, we will get a presentation on the Safe Route to School programs and hear Vice Chair Murphy's bill. So before us right now is the Met Council, which has been allotted 25 minutes for the presentation and 10 minutes for members' question. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Carlson. Please identify yourself and begin with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Charles Carlson. I'm the Director of Bus Rapid Transit Projects for Metro Transit. I just quickly want to confirm you can see my screen and hear my voice.
We can see. Please proceed.
Thank you. I'm presenting today on the Metro Transit Bus Rapid Transit Network, and the features of this network really are oriented toward providing a faster, more reliable, and attractive service to transit customers. The foundation of this is frequent all-day service, and we provide a more comfortable ride through both that faster travel as well as increased comfort at stations. We enable customers to pay ahead of boarding to reduce some of the stress as well as the delays that we face in boarding and leaving our vehicles. We also provide shelters with heat, light, and security features so that customers can be assured that they're both comfortable and safe as they're waiting for transit. When vehicles arrive, we use specialized vehicles and enable boarding through every door of the bus. So that significantly improves the travel times by reducing those delay factors. There's a few different kinds of BRT, bus rapid transit, in the system. We'll focus especially today on the arterial BRT lines, such as the A line and C line that we've implemented. But we also have highway BRT that we are opening later this year on the Orange Line, as well as dedicated guideway BRT that we don't have any examples of yet, but are actively developing within the region. An important point about these lines is that they actually have more in common than they have different from each other. They all have the same sort of all-day frequent service, specialized vehicles, comfortable stations. The differences between them really relate to the operating environment that they are in. So in a highway BRT context, we would be primarily running in HOV and price lanes. In a guideway BRT context, we would be running primarily an exclusive BRT-only guideway. But all of the features across this program would be constant, and that is why all of them are part of the same metro system. One difference is that we use color names. We get this question a lot. We use color names for the lines that operate primarily in a congestion-free travel right-of-way, such as highway or guideway BRT, and letter names for lines that operate on arterial streets, primarily in mixed traffic, but with some transit advantages. We have early success with this program. So the state legislature has invested in this program, both through general fund appropriations as well as bonding appropriations. We were able to use investment in the 2014 legislature's capital investment bill to construct and open the A line in 2016. We then implemented the C line, which runs on Penn Avenue North in Minneapolis and Brooklyn Center in 2019. In each of these cases, we saw immediate 30% ridership growth in the corridor. These projects, because they're not the large federal New Starts projects, don't have official ridership forecasts associated with them, but we were very pleased to see 30% ridership growth, especially because these were already very high frequency corridors. So the benefits, the increased travel time, yielded a significant return in terms of usefulness and ridership of these corridors. What that contributed to is that in 2019, we were actually able to carry over 3 million rides on BRT between these two lines, which we're very pleased with. That did decrease with the pandemic, but not as much as we experienced with other lines. So a lot of the benefit, a lot of the growth we saw in these lines has occurred in off-peak and weekend type travel, where we've actually seen more declines in other kinds of routes over the last few years. We've reversed that trend with BRT, and we're seeing really reliable all-day service as the key demand that we're able to fulfill effectively with these investments, and that makes us feel very confident about the future of this mode, even in spite of the pandemic. So we have a number of additional lines coming up that I'll cover briefly and then focus on a few of them. So the next line that will open is the Metro Orange Line, which runs on 35W between downtown Minneapolis and Burnsville. This is a fully funded project that's under construction. This is in part thanks to investment by the state. So in 2014 and 2017, we received both general fund as well as capital investment appropriations to construct this line. The state has roughly a 10% share of this project, and that has yielded and leveraged $150 million of investment in this corridor from federal and county sources. So significant leverage to bring this project online, and we've made good use of it. So this image, the images in this slide show the past, present, and future of the 35W and Lake Street Station. And I'll draw your attention to the upper right. This is really the condition we were starting with, was this staircase up to the side of the freeway. And you can, if you look at the top, you can see an old bus shelter, you know, really pretty lowly passenger facility on the side of the freeway. This was not accessible. That staircase was in poor condition. And with the context of a bigger freeway project coming, we were actually able to install really a significant transit station at this location. It's under construction now. It'll be completed later this year. So we're very pleased to bring a modernized, accessible facility to this location in the context of a larger MnDOT project on 35W that really is responsive and providing access to a community and a neighborhood that was effectively shut out of participation in this corridor So we're very pleased to bring this investment online later this year. Another part of the Orange Line is a underpass of 494 next to Best Buy's world headquarters, connecting Richfield and Bloomington. Providing this tunnel will save about 10 minutes compared to today's routing, where we have to really meander around the neighborhoods here, and will be a much better connection to both Richfield and Bloomington for riders coming to and from Minneapolis, Burnsville, and other locations along the line. So this investment is underway, and we're excited to complete it later this year as we bring the Orange Line online. The next line I'll mention is the Metro Gold Line. Now, this would be the first BRT line that operates primarily in dedicated guideway. So a new bus-only roadway will be constructed parallel to I-94. It's roughly a 10-mile line, and we're planning on construction of it next year. We're approaching 90% design now. Our primary funding partners are Washington and Ramsey counties, as well as the Federal Transit Administration. So we're advancing in the FTA New Starts program and hope to bring this into construction next year so that we're ready to operate it for service in 2024. Behind that is another corridor called the Rush Line BRT. This is a dedicated guideway BRT corridor as well that would run from Union Depot in St. Paul to White Bear Lake. It's currently led by Ramsey County in an environmental analysis process before it will transition to the Met Council for implementation later this year. When the council begins leading this, we'll put a color name on it, and then we will continue to develop the project for potential service by 2024. So we're excited to bring this line to the east side of St. Paul, as well as to Maplewood, White Bear Lake, Badness Heights, Gem Lake, and White Bear Township. So coming up next after the Gold Line BRT in terms of the higher profile dedicated guideway corridors. A lot of our focus in Metro Transit's network is on the arterial BRT system. And so this has all the features in common with the other higher end BRT corridors, but it's really focused on more of the developed area of Minneapolis, St. Paul, first ring suburbs, and some second ring suburbs. The Metro D line is the next corridor that will be coming up in this program. The D-Line is currently home to Metro Transit's highest ridership bus route, Route 5, and more than 120,000 people live within a half mile of the D-Line, so if it was a city on its own, it'd be one of the largest cities in Minnesota, but importantly, it is a city that would really rely on transit, so one in four households on the D-Line do not have access to a vehicle. So transit is a lifeline, not just for a commute, but for everyday life. And that's reflected in the ridership and the use of this corridor. We're very excited to launch construction. We've awarded a construction contract, and the line is planned to open in late 2022, late next year. The final funding for that came through the October 2020 bonding bill. So that completed the budget to move forward with construction. And now we've awarded that contract. It was shovel ready, and now we'll be actually underway as the ground thaws this spring. So very excited for that. I should note that a station was planned at Chicago Avenue and 38th Street. However, it will not be pursued within the current construction project. We will be coordinating with the city of Minneapolis as the future of that intersection comes into focus in the months and years ahead, whereupon we will definitely construct a station in the appropriate location and timing following that coordination. The B line is our next project up. So the B line would follow Lake Street, Marshall Avenue, and Selby Avenue between Minneapolis and St. Paul. This is our second highest ridership bus route, where we were carrying about 10,000 rides a day in 2019. Like the D-Line, this is a community that has significant use of our transit infrastructure. We'd be providing one bus access to over 130,000 jobs. This project also is fully funded. Thanks again to the October 2020 state bonding bill. We are moving forward with this project. This week, we released a draft corridor plan for community input, And we're beginning the engineering and construction processes as well with a planned service start in 2024. The E-Line would be the next corridor in our lineup. This would upgrade Route 6 between the University of Minnesota and Southdale via Hennepin Avenue and France Avenue. So this is another one of our highest ridership bus routes, and we'll be initiating the planning, the detailed planning this year. We've been doing quite a bit of work in the early planning for this project, but now we'll also be proceeding with engineering and then with full funding, moving to construction. So the overall project size for this line is around $60 million, and we've secured around $20 million of that, seeking about $40 million more to complete the project. So beyond these lines, we're also planning and have announced beginning this week the process to identify the next arterial BRT lines. We've been planning that over the last couple of years through the Network Next plan. So this is a 2040 bus network plan for Metro Transit that will include both local and express bus expansion, as well as evaluation and selection of the next few BRT lines. This is guided by both policy, performance data, and input, with four guiding principles that we've used at each step of the process. First and foremost, advancing equity, also building and growing ridership in the region, enabling that use of transit beyond the commute for really a transit-oriented lifestyle, but also ensuring that we're growing the bus network in a sustainable way and using resources wisely. So these have guided us as we've gone through a number of planning efforts. And this week, the Met Council heard a presentation of the recommendations for the next lines that the council will actually be taking action on next month. Those recommendations are to select the F line on the Central Avenue corridor in Northeast Minneapolis into Anoka County. So it'd be Anoka County's current only planned BRT line coming up. The G line would be on the Rice and Robert corridor, north and south of downtown St. Paul. And then that would be followed by the H line, which would upgrade our current Route 3 corridor, running east-west along Como Avenue and Maryland Avenue as a new service connecting to the Sunray Transit Center, as well as with connections to other BRT lines. So between the system, we have roughly 40 new miles of BRT corridors, about half of which would be in Ramsey County. So we're excited to be continuing to grow the reach of this network. With these recommendations, we would be serving four counties with BRT, and we'd be significantly providing job access by 2030. And that's illustrated on this next slide. So these two maps show job access within 60 minutes from each of the locations in the network. On the right, you can see the areas where when we've added the FG and H lines, these are the areas that would see increased access to jobs, you know, up to 800,000 jobs or so from places within 60 minutes on transit of these locations. So really significant access to jobs, but also to other destinations that folks travel to. The core value of arterial BRT in particular is a significant value for transit investment. So between the four lines that we have described today that are the next in the queue, these lines would carry about 50,000 rides every day. So that's a significant portion of our network. We have significant rides on the first lines as well as the other lines I mentioned today. But these next ones coming up will carry a significant share of our ridership for a comparatively modest investment. So the total investment in those four lines is around $320 million. We've identified a portion of that and would be looking for $200 to $250 million more to implement that full network over the next few years. So in comparison, you know, there's significant value to this. You know, perhaps you would be paying 10 times more for a similar number of rides if we chose a different mode on these corridors. So arterial BRT can really deliver the ridership benefit in these lines for a modest investment and a great return given the investment and operating that we already make in many of these corridors. In terms of our next steps, next month, as I mentioned, the council will select the corridors for the next lines. After that, we will refocus on local and express bus planning within the Network Next project. So with BRT selected, we'll be continuing to track ridership through the pandemic and then shifting that focus back to local and express bus planning. A number of corridors that weren't selected for BRT may still see significant service improvements through this local and express bus planning. And then we'd be continuing forward with corridor planning for BRT. So one reason we're selecting the F line, G line, and H line is that each of these projects will begin more detailed planning in the next couple years. So selecting each of them is critical so that we can begin that work. Beyond that, we do see three or four midterm corridors and three or four longer term corridors that we would seek to implement by 2040 or so. Those corridors are shown here. So from an initial screening of up to 19 corridors, we identified 10 that the council would seek to implement by 2040, three of which I just had mentioned as the F line, G line, and H line. This network really starts to come together and increases the reach of transitways in the region, both light rail and bus rapid transit, and significantly improves access for underserved communities. So as we focus on that, fully realizing this network could really serve a significant portion of the region's population. So within 5% of the 7-county land area, we'd be serving 28% of the region's residents and roughly 3/4 of the residents of Minneapolis and St. Paul within a 10-minute walk or roll of a metro station, whether it's BRT or LRT, as well as 46% of the region's BIPOC residents. So significant improvement to access for high quality transit across the region. And what that provides is really access to opportunity. So we would be serving about half of the people in the region with low incomes, about 30% of the region's households, including 60% of renter households and 60% of zero car households. We would be connecting those households and those people to 750,000 jobs in the region, or about 44% of all jobs in the region served by this metro network. So that's really the full system that we're seeking to implement through this program. This is more of a stylized map that shows how this network comes together. So instead of a series of lines, we see a full network developing as we connect these lines together, particularly with arterial BRT, and have a metro system that serves the region well. This is not the full extent of potential BRT lines planned for the region. We will again be examining those midterm and longer term corridors for arterial BRT in a handful of years. We'll be looking at that point to identify the subsequent lines. There are also a number of BRT projects that are under local planning or local consideration. So we'll hear about some of those, but Highway 55, I-94 and 252, Highway 36, as well as other corridors that are in the works that could come into the program as they are continued to be developed locally. So with that, Mr. Chair, I will conclude my presentation and welcome any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson, for that presentation. First up, we have Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Carlson, just a couple of quick questions. First, if I missed this in an early slide, I apologize. How many buses do you have total?
Great question, Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl. I don't know the number off the top of my head. I think it's in the neighborhood of 1,000.
Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Chair, Mr. Carlson, what percent of operating expenses are paid for by fares?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, that's a great question and an answer we'd need to follow up on. Not available on the top of my head related to BRT.
Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carlson, we would be interested in seeing that, so if you could provide that, that would be good.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Next up, we have Representative Abaje.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Thank you to the testifier. I just had a question a little bit on various considerations for new projects that we know that are coming up with highways, particularly the Highway 252 and I-94 project. Just wondering if you could speak a little bit more. I know you said they were under local consideration, but kind of when and how would the Met Council get involved with those projects?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you for that question. It's a great question, and really there's a couple different aspects in how we get engaged. Many of these corridors really start with local planning, so interest, local communities' interest in how these highways function, as well as how transit functions both today, how it could function in the future. In the case of I-94 and 252, Metro Transit is working with MnDOT. MnDOT is really the lead entity evaluating that, but we're working closely both on what transit in that corridor is today, but also in how BRT could perform in the future. It's not that type of evaluation typically happens outside of the council's sort of BRT project development, at least initially, but then eventually comes as the project would take shape, comes into council leadership. So one example of this would be in the I-35W corridor, where MnDOT and the legislature had worked together to identify what bus rapid transit could be in that corridor about 10 years ago. And then a handful of years after that, it became a more defined project that then Metro Transit and BRT projects worked to implement and now is actually seeing come to fruition later this year.
Representative Ajay?
I guess just a quick follow-up then, kind of where in the process is either A, that particular project, or B, some of the other local projects that you talked about, are they still very much in infancy with the state legislature, or are they further along, if you know?
Mr. Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, they're early in the process. I won't say infancy, but they're, you know, very much in the early planning phase where some of the parameters are defined for what it could be. And then that continues through environmental processes into engineering processes into construction.
Thank you,
Mr.
Chair.
We have Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the presentation, Mr. Carlson. I have a question about, in the governor's budget, there's language that cost shifts the funding of guideways to the counties. And would that only include the Gold Line and the Rush Line like you talked about? And how would that affect existing agreements like with North Star Rail up in my county, Anoka County?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, I may defer to Judge Shetman from the Met Council on this.
Mr. Shetman, please identify yourself and then proceed answering the question.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Judd Shetman. I'm the Government Affairs Director at the Met Council, and appreciate the question. Thank you, Representative West. The question I believe you asked, if this would, if the language that we have related to the guideway responsibility for capital maintenance and operating would be affected, would affect these projects. And that only applies to guideways, so where there are dedicated lanes or track. And so that language would apply to the Blue Line, the Green Line Extension, Gold Line, North Star, and the Blue Line Extension Botno. It would not have an impact on these ABRT-related projects that we're talking about this morning.
Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And would there be a significant departure from existing funding for those lines? Aren't the counties already funding those, like most of those, for those kind of expenses?
Mr. Shatman.
Mr. Chair and members, currently we have a language that has the state pay 50% of the operating cost after you take fares off the top, and the other 50% has commonly been paid for by the counties going back to 2004 when we added our first transitway, the Blue Line. However, the language is ambiguous on that. And although common practice has been that our county partners have provided the operating share on the issue with the language that we're bringing forward relates to, more so to the capital maintenance piece where related to the Southwest Line, it says that the state is not responsible for capital maintenance, but it is silent on who pays the remaining share. And then when we talk about these other guideways, there is no language related to who is responsible for that. And so that is the intention of our bill to come back or to come forward and to sort that out. And so Representative West, to your specific question, the counties are not paying, don't have a responsibility related to capital maintenance at this point. And so we're just trying to get a handle on what those life cycle costs will be, how they'll be paid for into the future.
Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Carlson or Mr. Schnettman. I think it's been 4 years ago now. I was in St. Louis, and they had electric buses for their bus rapid transit or the transit buses, and I think they were New Flyer buses, and I was intrigued to see the Met Council proposal for purchasing 143 biodiesel buses and with an additional option for purchasing 29 more. In, you know, and that biodiesel, I think, seems to be an option maybe 10 years ago, whereas electric vehicles, and I know that New Flyer can make electric vehicles, why would the Met Council be investing in older technology versus a potentially cleaner option for bus rapid transit or for transit? I don't understand that.
Mr. Shatman.
Great. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen. And the council is interested in pursuing electric bus technology. And in fact, I can have Charles follow up on how we are implementing that as part of our arterial BRT process. Representative Hansen, I'd also like to share that we're working very closely with our partners at New Flyer. We're very fortunate to have them just up the interstate from us here in St. Cloud. And we are kind of in the very early phases of trying to implement the battery electric buses into our system. Again, it is still kind of sunrising technology there, similar to where hybrid technology was 20 years ago. And so I think you'll see over the course of time here that we'll see that that improve, and that we'll be able to work out some of the kinks that we've had up to this point. But we also see that moving to electric bus is certainly going to be the future of where Metro Transit and Metropolitan Council wants to go, and we're very excited to be able to work with our folks at New Flyer. And so we also believe with the biodiesel type buses and the hybrid type buses that we have on the system that the technology on those has improved significantly as well and are much more environmentally friendly. However, our goal still is to transfer into a hybrid electric and electric type battery bus here into the future. It's just taking some time to get there and making sure that the technology is able to support the type of service that we have out on the street today.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, $121 million is a lot of money. So, you know, it may be good if for us in capital investment, if we're looking at how do we put in the bus rapid transit from a statewide perspective, life cycle analysis and the climate impacts, that's just a lot of money. It's an eye-popping number for an investment. It would seem that having a mixed approach on that would at least be a minimum rather than going all in biodiesel at 2021.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Next up, we have Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question relates to slide 17. I believe I read it's 50,000 daily riders are going to be available in 2040. If that's the case, what calculations have been taken into account for autonomous vehicles being, you know, sharing these routes? And how do you feel that the autonomous vehicles in the out years of 2040 are going to affect your calculations?
Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. The forecast model that is that accounts for that that future condition relates a lot to the existing transportation system. I think that the mobility of private vehicles, you know, may be comparable to the mobility provided by autonomous vehicles. So people may be driving themselves today and taking an autonomous vehicle in the future. But there's a lot that's unknown about what may occur over time. We do know that the volume of people moving in the region will increase as the region grows. And we know that transit and buses in particular provide a significant mobility improvement in a fairly small amount of space. And so we think that whatever the future condition may hold, and we'll be continuing to track that over the next 20 years, we do feel confident that bus transit will have a significant role in that in the future.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The last question is, in the budget that you've put together, and the expansion of these lines and the shelters and along these routes, what part of the budget have you put together to provide adequate public safety as far as looking for, you know, basically the whole idea of public safety, transients in some of these shelters, expanding the police protection or the security protection out into these neighborhoods that go out into the suburbs, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. Certainly, it's a component of our base service model. So our transit police are part of our cost estimation for these lines, as well as the expansion of these lines. And it'd definitely be part of our focus as we continue to expand and improve the system across the entire metro.
Mr. Chair, one follow-up.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. Do we have an FTE or a full-time equivalency count for the number of police officers, or excuse me, transit police that are being estimated in these numbers, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think it's certainly something we can look up, not available on the top of my head, but can follow up with the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. And seeing no other members' questions, I do want to echo some of the sentiment that was expressed by Representative Abaje around the highway BRT on I-94 and 252, knowing that we are putting in corridors of commerce dollars going forward. And so for MnDOT and the Met Council to really look at what can we do for those local communities that will be impacted, and then also to the Met Council on Representative Hansen's point around electric buses, it is my concern that we are, the Met Council is proposing to put in $122 million for biodiesel buses without any consideration for electric buses. I watched the hearing that the Transportation Committee of the Met Council have, and I am quite concerned with that, and we're glad that Chair Hornstein is on here. I believe that Representative Chair Long is also concerned about that too, and so we'll touch base with the Met Council after this. And right now, we'll move on to bills for today. Ms. Nash is the mayor of Columbia Heights here. If not, then we'll move on to Representative Hornstein first.
She is not on yet, but should be shortly, but I would move on.
Okay, so why don't we go first to Chair Hornstein. This is an informational only bill that's in front of us to talk about the E-line. The draft language is coded MB032, which is included in your virtual packet. Chair Hornstein, welcome to the committee, and please begin with your presentation.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members. I really appreciate this conversation about bus rapid transit, and I'm pleased to present on this informational basis a future House file that will be dealing with a bond appropriation for the E line. The E line is actually the next arterial bus rapid transit line in the queue. We did, and thanks to this committee and thanks to your leadership, especially Mr. Chairman, we were able to get, as was noted earlier, the appropriation in the October bonding bill for the B and D lines. So E is next, and just by way of introduction, I wanted to again give the committee a small bit of history on bus rapid transit. I was involved in developing the first definition for bus rapid transit in my freshman year in 2002. It was actually the first transportation bill that I had passed, and that was with a lot of help from the then majority Republican leadership in transportation, Chair Queasley at the time and Representative Holberg. And we have maintained that bipartisan commitment to bus rapid transit over the years, and I've appreciated the support from both sides of the aisle for this particular mode. So members, I do have one slide that I wanted to share with the committee, Mr. Chair, to orient you a little bit to this line and some of the data around it. And I do have Mr. Howe from the Transportation Committee assisting me. I don't know if, there we go. Members, this line is very much along the existing number six route, Metro Transit's number six route that starts at the University of Minnesota and then heads west and then over the river through downtown Minneapolis, then through the Loring Park neighborhood, and then crossing the very busy intersection of Lake and Hennepin, through uptown in the lakes area. You can see Lake Bede-Mikaska and Lake Harriet, then down along France Avenue South and ending at the very busy Southdale Transit Center. And, you know, given the fact this is very important because we're connecting the University of Minnesota, which has a lot of ridership and density around it, downtown, of course, 40% of the workers pre-pandemic downtown were taking transit. In the uptown area, which I represent, as well as parts of downtown, we have many commuters using transit, particularly younger commuters who have chosen transit for its convenience and economy. Parking downtown is quite expensive and there is a lot of congestion. And then the Southdale Transit Center has been a very important transit hub connecting Minneapolis to some of the southern suburbs. So we have 8,000 daily rides in this corridor, and that makes it one of the busiest transit corridors in the region. The E-Line is in the planning stages now, and as you can see, in just 3 years or so, we could be in the construction phase. And there are a number of infrastructure projects already along this corridor, so we'll be coordinating those, which I think creates a lot of efficiency and both in terms of the infrastructure construction and cost. So the budget is $60 million. $40 million is envisioned in this bill. And again, just if you, the bill is simple. Subdivision one is the appropriation. Subdivision two is the bond sale. And that would be for $40 million. And so members, I do strongly believe this will be a huge boon and transit enhancement for a large part of the southern and southwestern part of Minneapolis, as well as the University of Minnesota area, and in sections of northeast and southeast parts of Minneapolis. And a wide variety of people will be taking this, a lot of different, again, commuters, students, transit riders of all ages. And I think this is going to be, again, a very, very important benefit to our regional system. I do have a couple of testifiers, Mr. Chair, if we could move to them, who can talk about the importance of this line. A brief testimony would be in order, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Horsley. First up, we have Grace Watts from the Minneapolis Regional Chamber. Please identify yourself and begin with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Hornstein. My name is Grace Waltz. I am the Vice President of Public Policy for the Minneapolis Regional Chamber, and I'm here to testify in support of the E-Line proposal. We believe Arterial Bus Rapid Transit, or ABRT, is an excellent transit investment. ABRT buses get people to their destinations faster by making fewer stops and by using advanced design features to save time. As we've heard, custom stations with shelters, enhanced lighting, real-time schedule information, and push-button heating make ABRT more comfortable as well. Our region's proposed ABRT network will improve some of the area's highest ridership bus lines. As we heard earlier, the first leg of our region's ABRT network, the A-Line, experienced a 35% increase in ridership in its first year of operation. And the C-Line linking downtown Minneapolis and Brooklyn Center has also been a success. These ABRT lines benefit hundreds of thousands of people in our region and the businesses that have thousands of jobs to fill. In addition, ABRT buses are built by New Flyer, a company with over 1,000 employees in St. Cloud and Crookston. As a result, investing in ABRT has an additional positive impact across our state. Over the past 10 years, the Minneapolis Regional Chamber and our partners have commissioned two studies from national experts to assess the expected return on investment from building out our region's transit system. These reports have confirmed that in addition to providing more and better ways to get around, investments in transit pay off, both for those who use transit and for those who use our roads and highways. Building a comprehensive transit system in our metro area will provide a major return on investment, more than $9 billion in positive direct impact. Employers and employees have been seeking better transit, and this report shows that it's also the smart thing to do from a monetary perspective. When our region builds quality transit, people from all walks of life use it to make their lives better. It's also important to note that our most recent study found that 81% of the benefits of a better transit system would be enjoyed by people and businesses using the region's street and highway system. This shows building transit has significant positive benefits for users of transit and for everyone else. Investments in transit are a true win-win that helps more people get to jobs and provides benefits to everyone in the region. We know businesses prefer to locate near transit, where employees and customers will have more travel options. And investing in transit now will generate positive impacts for our economy for decades, including additional state and local tax revenues of nearly the same magnitude as the investment costs, $143 million a year, or $2.86 billion over 20 years. There is momentum for transit investments here in Minnesota that strengthen our economy and make our state an even better place for businesses and employees. The Minneapolis Regional Chamber has been advocating strongly for transit investments, and this ROI information only strengthens our resolve and desire to make this happen. We are hopeful that policymakers will recognize the significant benefits that come with transit and will make smart choices in support of investments that benefit our economy, employees, and everyone in the region. The E-Line ABRT will help deliver better cost-effective access to jobs in the metro and support jobs around the state. Again, it's a true win-win. We ask that you support the E-Line proposal, and thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Waltz. Next up, we have Mr. Marcus Mills. Please identify yourself and begin with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Lee, Representative Hornstein. My name is Marcus Mills. I am a small business owner in the Minneapolis and Marcy Homes neighborhood area. My largest client is an energy environment nonprofit called Community Power. I have been involved in many aspects of this, these processes from the small area level on up, and wanted to let everybody know that I, you know, as both a BIPOC individual and a former student at the University of Minnesota and a 25-year resident of the Minneapolis area and 20 years right here in this very spot, three blocks away from the 6 line, this would be a boon to many of the different types of people, not only that you're seeking to serve, but that Mr. Carlson referred to in his conversation and proposal earlier. I know that my own position has been bettered by the use of transit around the city and in the region throughout the area. I've taken the 6 literally hundreds of times. And the speed of a rapid transit concept of taking the A-Line in the course of some of my work would actually improve the lives of tons of students in the area. The Marcy Homes neighborhood was 10,000 strong at the last census. Most of that is students. And the ability of them to get around to downtown, uptown, jobs all along that corridor, and the ability of people from the Southdale area to get up into uptown, downtown, and the university area makes for an easily versatile and capable corridor for people to achieve job capabilities, a greater variety of services that they can access, greater capacity in terms of understanding their own area and being able to utilize great capacities of both economic strength, culture. There's the museums and uptown along that route. Several theaters if they were still open. The capabilities that people will accumulate in that transit corridor and will have greater and swifter access to are near limitless. And I can speak to having been a part of that for much of my life. In fact, more than half of my life. I have, which helps me in my job, but I have never had to use my own personal vehicle. I've never had to have a car of my own. I have saved a great deal of money in utilizing the transit system that exists in my home city. And it's one of the reasons why I make my home here. I choose to stay here and why I believe I'll be able to for much of the rest of my life. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mills. Chair Hornstein, any closing comments?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to the great testimony from Ms. Waltz and Mr. Mills. And I just would like to say in conclusion, and you know, as we put together a transportation funding package, it's very, very important in this moment to really look at transportation through three different lenses. The jobs and economic development potential and return on investment that was so clearly and well articulated by both of the testifiers is critical. Looking at this through an equity lens is also absolutely more important than ever. And finally, looking through it through a climate lens, and I appreciated Chair Hansen's comments about electrification. Transit in general is one of the most effective ways that we can reduce greenhouse gases in the transportation sector. And I would let the committee know that, the Pollution Control Agency has identified transportation as the single largest source of greenhouse gas emissions. And in fact, the source that we have done the least effective work as a state in reducing in terms of that sector. So, for those three reasons alone, I think this is a very, very good investment. This is a highly used corridor and very, very appropriate to be the next in line for funding to build out our ABRT system, which Mr. Carlson had shared the system map with you. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for taking the time to hear this bill and look forward to more engagement with this committee on it.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. Now we'll move to House File 1381. I will move House File 1381 to get it before the committee with a recommendation that it is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bonding bill. Representative Cagle, House File 1381 is before us. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So I have House File 1381 is the Central Line Corridor. And so I'm just sharing some pictures right now of what that corridor looks like. It's pretty dangerous. I think one of the things that I'm really excited about for this corridor is that it can improve pedestrian safety, access to transit, and then really free up some traffic on our roads here. This section of road is one of the most dangerous in the metro. You can see people here crossing. One of my, favorite ones is this one right here, where you can see the bus stop is literally just on the side of the highway. And so that is really what I'm excited about with this project, is that we're asking for $55 million for the Central Line Corridor, which you just heard is one of Met Council's next lines that they're going to be investing in. And then I also just wanted to share, I think you guys all saw this, but you know, within the corridor, there's over nearly 65,000 people that would be served, and by 2040, it'd be over 75,000 people. 46% of Route 10 riders are people of color and live in low-income households. And also, really, it's just a large growing area. If you drive up University Avenue, you see a bunch of new apartment buildings. In the northern part of Blaine, where Representative West lives, is there's housing developments and stuff. So this could be a really key transportation, a key issue in our district to make sure that people can access the transportation they need and get down to jobs. And then also, I know many of you in the transportation committee came up and saw our little neck of the woods last year and the problems that we have on Highway 65. And so I think this BRT would really help our community. And so with that, I will turn it over to my testifier, the mayor of Columbia Heights.
Thank you, Representative Cahill. Mayor Marquez Simula, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, good morning. My name is Amada Marquez Simula. I'm a newly elected mayor of Columbia Heights, the first person of color to be elected in Columbia Heights. Since I've been elected, I've attended multiple meetings with MnDOT discussing where the next BRT should go. It's clear from the feedback I've heard during these community outreach meetings with many members of our community and many people of color being able to make time for that, it would definitely improve people's lives to have Route 10 become a BRT line. We've added hundreds of apartments in our city and plan to add more. We have new market rate apartments going in with a city hall on the first floor that's being built next year. We have another affordable housing plan that's going up one block away from Central in the next few years. I've used number 10 many times to go downtown. It's great to have that, that expressway. I've used it to get to the airport. So I know that it works really well. It helps us stay connected, but to bridge our community to the northern suburbs with the rest of the metro will benefit so many. Before the pandemic, there were 7,100 riders a day, but it's expected with BRT it would go to 12,000 a day. And those are, you know, individual people whose lives are going to benefit by more accessible and quicker transit and safer, as our representative had mentioned. Central, as you know, is very dangerous. We've had a few deaths already this year, and we're only in February still. This will help our communities having BRT because they will connect with more employment options, be able to see friends and family more easily, which we need to do, have access to shopping, leisure, fun for individuals and families together. I see many families traveling on the bus. We have shopping and groceries and schools as well. I just want to say, please invest in the BRT line and help our communities thrive and move into the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Seeing no question, Representative Cahill, any closing comments?
I think that this is a, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You know, this Central Line BRT is just going to be a real breath of new life into our community. And I think that having this safe, accessible transit in our area will really open up the North Metro and make it much more appealable, much more appealing for people to live up here with their families. And so I'm really excited. This is great. So thank you so much. Support it.
Thank you, Representative Cahill. House File 1381 is laid over. Now, members, we will move on to public testimony in relation to the BRT development that has been presented. Welcome to the committee. Mr. Shore, you may start. I understand that you have a presentation, so please identify yourself and begin with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Can you confirm that you can hear me and see my screen?
Yes, please proceed.
Thank you. My name is Will Schroer. I am the Executive Director of East Metro Strong. We are a public-private partnership between two counties, six cities, and large employers in the eastern half of the region, including 3M and M Health Fairview. Our members support and work together to improve transportation options, especially in the East Metro, but really throughout the region. For all of the reasons that you've heard so far this morning, we need to get folks to work. We need to give people opportunities to shop and see their family, and to do so with a safe, accessible, and comfortable transportation system. I would like to back up just a little bit away from the individual lines and talk, go back to Mr. Carlson's excellent presentation, and I just want to draw your attention to a little more depth on a couple of points that you've heard. As Mr. Carlson noted, bus rapid transit outperformed every other kind of transit last year, and really underlines the fact that this is a system that people feel safe on and that people need. Metro Transit has been in the unenviable position of asking people to not use its service unless they're essential workers. And we've seen that those essential workers overwhelmingly are using the bus lines to get to work. A couple of years ago, when the legislature was considering the A and C line, or the C line, we went out and talked to folks on the A line to understand their experience of it, and complete man, woman, you know, child on the street interviews, not teed up. And we made this little video, which I'm don't have time to play for you today, but I encourage you to go look at it. And just the enthusiasm that people have for the comfort and the speed of these lines and the accessibility that it gives them was moving to me. So I encourage you to go to betterbusesmsp.com and just watch that video. And I'd like to build on what you heard from the Minneapolis and the West Side in terms of the support for BRT, and just underline that folks on the East Side support that system expansion as well. Ecolab CEO Doug Baker had a news conference with a number of other East Metro folks a couple of years ago to ask that the B line be extended downtown and that the to downtown St. Paul, and that the legislature support the funding for that. Thank you for providing that funding, and we're so excited to see the B line now coming all the way to Union Depot in St. Paul and providing the access between the two cities that is good for both sides. So thank you very much for that. And we are very supportive of the rest of the system build out that Mr. Carlson underlined for you or outlined for you. I'd like to offer one more level of depth as well on some of the comments that you already heard, that the buses are made here in Minnesota. And we're just delighted that the C line buses were made by New Flyer. And what perhaps you are not as familiar with is all of the other components of those buses that are also made here in Minnesota. And want to draw your attention to a report that East Metro Strong did with the Minneapolis Regional Chamber of Commerce a couple of years ago on where those component manufacturers are that are supplying New Flyer. So it's not just the folks in Crookston and in St. Cloud that benefit from these jobs. But as you'll see here, this map is of transit component manufacturers all over the state of Minnesota. And if you peer at your screen a little bit, just as I'm doing, you'll see that roughly four of those out of all 60 are in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and the rest are spread throughout all of Minnesota. So this is really a construction and manufacturing operation that benefits folks across the state. And as Grace Waltz from the Minneapolis Chamber mentioned, those benefits of the actual lines provide greater reliability for folks using the roads as well, because they're not as jammed up with other traffic. So we see this as good for all of Minnesota, and I just wanted to underline and add a little bit of extra depth to a couple of the points that you've heard before. I'm going back here, and I would draw your attention to the actual report from which this map is drawn, and that was made available to the committee and is posted on the site as well. It's to me compelling reading, so I draw your attention to it. So I would like to just wrap up and underline that from the perspective of large employers and all of the residents of our counties and cities in the East Metro, bus rapid transit is used. We know that it works, and we know that it's made here in Minnesota, and we have been grateful for the support from the West Side for our investments in the East Side. We're regionalists, and we support the request for the E-line bonding and look forward to building out the full system that Mr. Carlson outlined as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Schroer. Next up, we have B. Kyle, the president of the St. Paul Area Chamber. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is B. Kyle. I'm the president and CEO of the St. Paul Area Chamber. The business community speaks with one voice on transit. We depend on it, and we need even more investment. This is a good problem to have. Our metro region's growing even now, and we continue to support further investment to further expand options. We know that a robust, interconnected, multimodal transit system requires investment, and I believe that this committee can demonstrate that smart and continued investments will position our entire state for further growth. We do recognize the complexity of your work and thank you for your service. Speaking on behalf of the metro region specifically, we want to assure you that transit is increasingly essential for our companies, large and small, to be accessible to the entire region's workforce. I'm glad to echo and concur with the voices you've already heard this morning without repeating them. And I'd like to amplify our message through the lens of equity. The principal tenets of a commitment to equity are that we remain dedicated to making intentional, actionable strides to commit our connections, practices, and systems to an equitable and thriving region. This simply means that we need to look through the lens of equity in all our work, and transit is no exception. Indeed, transportation planning decisions can have significant equity impacts. The quality available affects economic and social opportunities. Transportation investments require significant public resources, and the allocation of which can favor some people over others. And the location can affect development location and type, along with which comes more housing accessibility and local economic activity. So targeted investments in areas that need even more support is critical. As we look to our competitive position, unequivocally, further investment in transit elevates the economic opportunity of our residents, supports further job growth. You know, where lines begin, amplified opportunity follows. And the converse is equally true. It must include more investments in the East Metro counties of Washington, Ramsey, and Dakota. Again, where we invest, development follows. We absolutely need more of both in the East Metro specifically, provided for more equitable access to opportunity across the region. Ultimately, beyond building where people are, we encourage you to build creatively and proactively for where you want more growth to happen. And it can't wait. I mean, time equals cost, and those costs won't just be monetary. There'll be lost time, productivity, and especially lost opportunity, things we can't get back. We all know the world has changed, and in some ways permanently, and while some jobs will continue to be work from home, transit increasingly is an essential part of our economic competitiveness moving forward. So I thank you for the opportunity to share my thoughts with you today.
Thank you, Ms. Kyle. Mr. Sam Rockwell, you have 3 minutes. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Sam Rockwell. I am the Executive Director of MOVE Minnesota Transit Advocacy and Policy Organization, and also teach a course on transportation design, law, and policy at the University of Minnesota. I want to underscore how BRT investments, at its core, it's not about transportation, but it's about our communities. It's about fulfilling more of the promise of being a Minnesotan, and it's about our future. To echo Representative Hornstein, you know, BRT is critical to addressing climate change. Transportation is our leading source of emissions, and in addition to electrifying the vehicles on the road, we need to reduce how much we drive to meet Minnesota's Next Generation Energy Act targets. And if we're going to be able to do that, we need to be able to provide people with alternatives to driving that provide at least as much, if not more, access to opportunities and well-being in Minnesota. And that means investing in those alternatives. And for practical purposes, that means investing in bus rapid transit to achieve our climate targets. BRT can roll out quickly. And this is important both because our transition to a low carbon economy needs to be fast and efficient, and also because getting more lines on board faster means that we have a full network to make the system work better for all people, right? We don't live our lives, none of us live our lives back and forth on a single corridor. And so while it's great to have line, an additional line, what we really need is that full network, that map that we saw earlier, so that we can drop our kids at school over here, go to work over there, see friends in another direction. We heard from Mr. Schroer about the importance of access to jobs, and I want to expand on that a bit, and that it's access to jobs and about access to all facets of daily life, civic, social, cultural, educational opportunities. And this improved service, a BRT service, will improve the lives of folks who are currently on transit, who are disproportionately people of color, disproportionately lower income, disproportionately essential workers, and it expands the opportunities because it literally expands what a transit rider can access in a particular amount of time. Again, back to those maps that we saw from Mr. Carlson. It also expands the number of people who can go car-free, freeing up the money that folks currently spend on vehicles. Cars are expensive, $9,000 a year, according to AAA, and if folks are able to keep that money in their pockets and then spend that to start a business, invest in a home, go out with friends to support the local economy, that's money that, supports our entire state. And that's the note that I want to close on. BRT investments strengthen all of us, the entire state, through a cleaner environment, a stronger economy, and a just society. And this committee's leadership on BRT investments is absolutely critical for the future of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rockwell, for being on time. Just want to say thank you all to our testifiers for coming up today to talk about BRT. Next up, we will have an overview from the Minnesota Department of Transportation on the Safe Routes to School program before we take up Chair Murphy's bill. Mr. Cohen, please begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to provide a brief summary on the Safe Routes to School program. Can you verify that you can see the screen and hear my voice?
We can. Please proceed.
Thank you. I'm Dave Cowan. I am the Safe Routes to School coordinator in the Office of Transit and Active Transportation at the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And I'm joined today by Girma Faiza, who is a partner over in State Aid for Local Transportation, that may join us during questions. To start, why Safe Routes to School? I generally start a conversation about this by asking people in the room how they arrived at school. But since there's so many of you, I will get straight to the answer, which is fewer kids today are walking and biking to school. In fact, three times less than in the past are walking and biking, and this has had unintended consequences on youth in Minnesota and across the nation. That includes increases in obesity, diabetes, heart disease, asthma, but also unsafe traffic near schools, and has had impacts on academic achievement and student behavior in the classroom. Both in Minnesota and nationwide, we have seen Safe Routes to School programs can be a part of the solution. In Minnesota, we do have a vision for what Safe Routes to School can look like. We aim for youth in Minnesota to safely, confidently, conveniently walk and bike and roll to school and in daily life. And this vision and the goals and strategies that support the next 5 years of the Safe Routes to School program in Minnesota were a part of our recent update to the statewide strategic plan. It was a result of engaging with Safe Routes to School practitioners from around the state and is focused and centered in equity. Safe Routes to School programs aim to make it safer for those that are already walking and biking to school, but they also aim to make it convenient to support those that don't currently walk or bike but may consider changing this habit. Unfortunately, with Safe Routes, it isn't necessarily if you build it, they will come. It takes a comprehensive approach, not just putting out a sidewalk or a trail, but working within the community, understanding what the issues are, and providing educational and encouragement supports. So this means that we're both gaining quantitative understanding of what's going on in the community through evaluation, qualitative and meaningful engagement with the community to understand the barriers and address relevant needs, and ensuring that we're doing that equitably by identifying schools with the greatest need and making activities and materials accessible to all. In addition, we aim to educate students, parents, and community members on what safe walking and bicycling looks like. We do that with our Walk Bike Fun curriculum that is taught in schools throughout Minnesota, putting on bike rodeos, and encouraging students through Walk and Bike to School Day events, or the organization of walking school buses or bike trains. And finally, through engineering, which allows changes to the built environment, including the addition of sidewalks, trails, and crossings that make it safer and easier for students to walk and bike. In Minnesota, we've helped communities address their issues with a comprehensive Safe Routes to School program by providing Safe Routes to School planning. In Minnesota, we've had over 500 schools that now have Safe Routes to School plans. A high level snapshot of what this looks like in Minnesota. Since the program began in 2006, we funded $50 million in Safe Routes to School projects statewide. Almost $44 million of those dollars went to infrastructure projects, with 70% outside of the metro. We funded 471 projects in total, affecting an estimated 1,704 schools. And currently, we are ranked the third best Safe Routes to School program in the nation, and we're always gunning for number one and number two. More specifically related to some Safe Routes to School activity with infrastructure, as I know you all are considering a bonding bill. In 17 and 18, bonding provided $2 million in Safe Routes to School infrastructure that was ultimately granted to the communities listed on the screen here to either fully fund their project or support partial funding of an existing project. And then more recently, in October of 2020, a bonding bill provided $3 million for Safe Routes to School infrastructure. We can expect that in fall of 2021, we'll have a Safe Routes to School solicitation to coincide with our federal transportation alternatives solicitation. Truly, Safe Routes to School is happening all over Minnesota in communities near you. And in an effort to be more transparent about program activities and funding and help connect those currently working on Safe Routes to School with those that are interested in their communities, we've developed the Visualizing Safe Routes to School in Minnesota map, which is an interactive map that allows you to see what's happening in your community, from participation in events to teaching students safe walking and biking, and building better and safer facilities for students to walk and bike. And I had hoped to send some of these links to you in the chat, but I realized last minute that I wouldn't be able to do that. So I think that Jenny Nash will be following up with those after this meeting. And thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Collin. Seeing no members' question, we'll move to House File 1108. Chair Murphy, do you move House File 1108 to get it before the committee with a recommendation that it is laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Capital Investment Bill?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Murphy. House File 1108 is before us. Please present your bill.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I welcome the enthusiasm that this bill raises. I want you to remind people that this bill's mother was 2529 in the past biennium, and 2529 became a $1.89 billion bonding bill. So this was the vehicle for the big money. And I'm hoping that the daughter, House File 1108, which so many of you have asked to become co-authors of, has the same ending as 2529 did. But factually, I'm carrying this bill because I remember my early days in first grade. My four older brothers walked to school and came home at various times of the day or evening because of the sporting events after school that they had to participate in. But the superintendent of schools told my mom, well, Mary Catherine probably should be riding the bus to school instead of walking all the time. But my experience riding the bus to school then became kind of horrific. The big kids were not nice to Mary Catherine, age 6. They were mean. And I thought, I'd be better off if I walked to school and nobody bothers me at all. And so I started, and except on the very cold days, I did not ride the bus then for a while, for a good while, until I became a big kid. But I was never mean to the little girls. So that puts a different perspective on what Mr. Cohen said. But it's healthier. It's better for kids if they have options on how to get to school. And it's better for the parents because they want to feel that their child is safe in the time that they leave the house and they get to school and the time they leave school and get back home to the house. And so that's what Safe Schools is all about. And each community has a different plan. And Dorian Greiley can tell you a better story than I, and so can Shauna Mullen.
Thank you for sharing that. Mr. Greiley, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Lee, Chair Murphy, and members of the committee, my name is Dorian Greiley. I'm with the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota. As noted in the letters that you got from around the state and from Mr. Cowan's testimony, Safe Routes to School planning has been going on for more than a decade, and there are hundreds of plans waiting to be implemented. Some are simple, like a stretch of sidewalk or a crossing signal. Some are more complex and expensive, like bridges or underpasses spanning major roads. You've gotten letters with heartfelt messages from small towns like Barnesville, Dilworth, Jackson, and Breckenridge about how a modest project has made a huge difference in safety and accessibility. And they've also mentioned that they have a lot more that they'd like to do. You've also heard from advocates and administrators in larger communities, Greater Minnesota Regional Centers, the metro suburbs, and the urban core, who have also made use of Safe Routes funds for projects big and small. They also have a lot more to do, as witnessed by the tragic death of a student in 2019 who was crossing Diffley Road right in front of the Northview Elementary School. The Bicycle Alliance is also very involved with Safe Routes at the local level. In partnership with MnDOT and Blue Cross Blue Shield, we have developed the elementary school safety curriculum Dave Cowan mentioned called Walk Bike Fun, and have trained over 800 educators to use it in every corner of the state. Those educators are reaching about 80,000 kids per year. It's exciting to be part of helping our kids learn to navigate their communities safely and helping our communities make it safe for them to lead active lives. It's heartwarming to know that the demand for these funds is growing and that it's being driven by that safety and health concern for our children. The supporters of the Bicycle Alliance from around the state urge you all to support House File 1108. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greiley. Next up, we have Ms. Mullen from Duluth. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, thank you. This is Shauna Mullen. And first of all, just want to agree with everything Sam Rockwell said a while ago regarding transportation in Minnesota. All of that is so true, and it applies to Safe Routes to School as well. I live in Duluth with my daughter, who is in elementary school, and we bike, walk, and take transit as much as we can because we value the unique way we can experience our city when we're using these modes of transportation. We're much more connected to our neighbors and to our community when we're walking or on a bike or the bus. When there is safe infrastructure in place, these are really convenient ways to get around, and we experience the many benefits that active transportation provides. The one place that we can't walk or bike to, however, is elementary school. We live only 1.25 miles from my daughter's school, but there is no safe route to get there, not even a sidewalk or crosswalks in some places along the route. We also don't qualify for the school bus, being just 1 block outside of the busing boundary. That means that our only option to get to school is driving in a personal vehicle, And I say option with air quotes because, of course, if it's the only way to get there, it isn't really an option at all. I definitely don't want to have to drive her to and from school every day, but luckily we do have a vehicle, but that can't be said for 30% of the households in our neighborhood who don't own vehicles. From the moment she started kindergarten, my daughter was asking me why we couldn't walk and bike to school anymore, like we always did to get to preschool, and I told her there was no safe way to get there, no sidewalks or bike paths. She responded that she wanted me to pull over to the next roadwork construction crew we saw so that she could ask them to build the sidewalk and the bike route to her school. Last year, as the city of Duluth was doing planning work around a future trail connection that would lead to her school, she spoke at 8 years old at a city council meeting about it. She told our elected officials, "I'm in third grade at Lowell Elementary School, and all I want to do is be able to bike to my school without getting squished like a pancake." And I really can't summarize the situation any better than that. Safe and accessible infrastructure is the most basic and vital element to getting kids walking and biking to school. The reason my daughter and I can't do it isn't for lack of desire, but solely for lack of a safe route. So I'm asking you to fully support the proposed funding for Safe Routes to School in its entirety. This investment into our youth and our future is absolutely critical. Minnesotans need to have options to get their kids to school, and safety is of utmost importance. The Safe Routes to School program has contributed to great progress in this area, but we still have a long way to go, and Safe Routes to School will get us there. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Ms. Mullen. Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Patrick Vitek is from my district. He lived and died in my district. And so I just want to honor his family and their loss. And I also want to say that the community was working to have that intersection addressed for years before this tragic passing. And so my message today is to just ask everyone to think about the impact on your district if this happened, and to please support this addition to the state budget in order to prevent and make the state a safer place for all of our bicyclists and pedestrians. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ryer, for those words. Chair Murphy, any closing comments?
No.
Thank you, Chair Murphy. House File 1108 is laid over. Members, our next meeting is Tuesday, March 2nd. On the agenda is the governor's 2021 capital budget recommendations. This meeting is adjourned.